The topic is Yahrzeit, the anniversary of death, customs and observances. When Dr. Ganschar was asking me what topic I would address, so one of the ways, sometimes we like to talk about the things which are interesting to us. Sometimes you look at the calendar, you want to talk about things which are related to the calendar. So when I looked at the calendar, I'm actually observing, I mean, in the way that I observe these yard sites, but my parents, shortly after they moved from Muncie, they had a little girl who was born after me, and she unfortunately died of SIDS when she was 3 months old, and her yard site is this coming Sunday. So that's one yard site which is, I always remember it because it's Yud Zayin Teves. Not Yud Zayin Tammuz, but a week after Asar B'Teves, so it's very easy for me to remember that one. And then my grandmother, who passed away almost 2 years ago, her yard site is also next week. So for me, the calendar spoke about yard sites, and I thought, as Dr. Gantro mentioned, this is a mature audience where I would imagine that most, if not everybody here, observes at least one, if not two yard sites a year. So, or many people certainly do. So I thought that would be an appropriate subject to talk about today. And our learning is L'Iluy Nishmasam, and if anybody else has a yard site around this time, as you'll see, that's one of the practices of yard sites is to learn. It was the Yiddish writer Mendel Moicher Sfarim who wrote that among Jews, a birthday is not a holiday, but the anniversary of a death, that a Jew remembers. So when we talk about a Yahrzeit, which is Yiddish, meaning a year's time, it marks the anniversary of someone's death, it's important to bear in mind the sensitive nature of the time. The Gemara in Moed Katan, Rabbi Meir compares the words of consolation that a person may offer on this day to a physician asking a patient about his healed broken leg, saying, let me break your leg again and reset it to convince you that my treatment was a good one. It sounds ludicrous, and that's in a sense what a Yahrzeit is for some people. It's just reopening a very old wound. So when it comes to Yahrzeits, you know, the first one is usually the most difficult, but one year officially marks the end of a mourning period. But the yearly Yahrzeit is a regular reminder of the loss of a beloved parent or relative. And for some people, it increases the feeling of emptiness that we may feel over the loss of the departed. And so when it comes to Yahrzeit, what a lot of people talk about is the concept of what we would call the aliyas neshama, the elevating of the soul. But that idea is really Kabbalistic in nature. We're going to see some Kabbalistic thoughts related to that soon. And it's the rabbis, our sages, Chazal, they teach us that the soul's original judgment is reviewed on the Yahrzeit. It's given the opportunity to elevate its status in Gan Eden. How? What will work in its merit if it hasn't had the chance to perform mitzvos and to fulfill mitzvos and do the commandments? And the answer is, it's the people who are left behind. We believe that our deeds can be a merit for the neshamas, and that the things that we do all the time, but most specifically on the date of the Yahrzeit, can stand as a merit for the souls of our beloved ones who are no longer with us. And some of these practices include, most famously perhaps, the study of Mishnayos, the recitation of Tehillim, and anybody who comes to shul in the morning of a yard site knows also saying brachos over food. And we'll see, of course, the lighting of the candles, which is also very, very popular. So with all that said and done, and with no further ado, let's take a look at the source material which I've given to you. We're going to be looking at a few different themes. We'll start with the sources which I gave to you in English, which is from the book Sefer Matamim. Sefer Matamim, there are many books which were written over the years which focus on the reasons for customs. And Sefer Matamim is one of them. So this is going to be the easiest part of following the source sheet because it's in English. And let's just read through 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Number 1. So everyone's familiar with the idea of lighting a yahrzeit candle. And the reason for lighting candles for yahrzeit is because Tetzaveh always falls out in the week of Moshe's yahrzeit. Traditionally, Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit is on the 7th day of Adar. So it usually falls out in the week of Parshas Tetzaveh. And as we know, Parshas Tetzaveh is the Parsha in the Torah which is noted for not having Moshe's name in it. Doesn't mention his name, and it says, L'ha'alos ner tamid, to indicate that during this time we are lighting a candle for Moshe Rabbeinu in place of remembering his name, because he was the father and teacher of all of Israel. Atat Tetzaveh begins, one of the instructions is that Aharon the Kohen is going to be lighting the candle forever. Lighting the candle for whom? For the one who we are remembering. Who are we remembering? The one who's not mentioned in the Parsha, namely Moshe. And so, while that candle lighting refers to the lighting of the menorah in the Mishkan, but nonetheless, and this is a book of customs, it takes the concept of the custom from that original person whose death we are remembering, or whose name we're remembering, and how are we doing that? Through the lighting of candles. So that's a source. Is it the only source? It's not the only source, but in that book it mentions that reason. Number 2. Since the Son, and of course when we talk about the Son, when we talk about the Father, the literature in general talks mostly about a Son and a Father, but that's not meant to be exhaustive. It can also refer to a Son and a Mother, or a Daughter and a Father and a Daughter, or a Mother. The only difference is that some of the practices that we're referring to are in the synagogue. And who's going to lead the davening? So, of course, that's in it. Certainly in an Orthodox synagogue, that's going to be a man. But as far as the recitation of Kaddish, our general practice is not to limit it only to men. If women want to say Kaddish, they can say Kaddish. So we'll see that as well. Since the Son is the Kara Deavua, in other words, he is the image of his father, and on the day the father dies, is considered a bad luck day for the son, we light the candle to lighten up one's mazel on this day. So in a sense, the candle has a metaphorical type of message that we're lighting up the darkness in this day for us. And that light can surely be a tikkun or a correction or a merit for the soul of the deceased father. In this way, the soul of the father, which is compared to a candle, is elevated. It's not just the deceased father, anyone. There's a pasuk in, I believe it's in Mishlei, Kiner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that the candle of God is the soul of a human being. So if we are commemorating the soul, so a candle is a proper way to commemorate that soul. Number 3, the reason why we use a wax candle in the book of Matamim is because the word sha'ava, which means wax, it has the same letters as shava, she'ei shavas b'nei ami, which refers to prayer. A person prays for the soul of the deceased that the soul should shine in Gan Eden, and wax, sha'ava, it's a good, you know, small little play on words to indicate why we might be using a wax candle. Skip to the top of the next column, which is number 4. The reason for learning Mishnayos on the yahrzeit day is because the first Rashi in Yevamo says that the day that a great person died is established as a day to honor him. Every year on that day, scholars would gather at his grave along with the rest of the people to establish a yeshiva there. I gave you the Rashi in Hebrew for those who want to look at the language in its original. But the idea is that gathering at the place of burial to have a yeshiva. What is a yeshiva? A place where you're going to learn. So the minhag became to learn Mishnayos. I don't know why it was specifically Mishnayos at that particular time and at that particular place in that way, but the learning was meant to be a merit for the soul. And number 5, another reason why we remember the deceased on Shabbos is because it is also a day of rest for their souls. On such a day, it's worthy to remember them, to bless them, and to pray for them. I know you're having Rabbi Davis here in a few sessions. He's not next, but in a few sessions, you're going to have Rabbi Davis. So I heard Rabbi Davis say, interesting, why do we commemorate the yahrzeit on the Shabbos before? And he said, this was not his idea, but I don't remember who he quoted, that the reason why we do it on the Shabbos before is because we know that on Shabbos, every person gets what's called the neshama Yisera, right? An additional neshama on Shabbos. So the Shabbos before the yard site is, hypothetically speaking, the last time that that person's neshama Yisera experienced its presence in that person. And so the Shabbos before the yard site is a commemoration of the person's neshama Yisera. So for those who are careful about making sure to get an aliyah or whatever it is that they do on the Shabbos before, in this shul the practice is to make a kiddush, right? So it's certainly proper to do that, because in a way, the neshama Yisera, that's the Shabbos before the Yaretzayit, is essentially the Yaretzayit of that additional neshama. Okay, and the last idea, which is recorded in Sefer Matamim, at least that I'm presenting here, is why we remember the souls and say Kel Mole on Shabbos. So in addition to the idea which I just mentioned, I don't have to go through all the details inside, but the book Matamim quotes this Medrash Tanchuma on Parshas Ha'azinu, which goes into an interesting approach to how the signs of the zodiac play a role, a symbolic role, throughout a person's life. And I think I mentioned on Shabbos in the shiur that I gave here that the concept of the zodiac is not, you know, is the Jewish concept. In other words, it's not exclusively not Jewish concept. There were many rabbis who were astrologers and they understood these things in a way that I certainly don't. But the fact that the Medrash Tanchuma goes through in the way that he does, and you see that I put in here. The in bold, the parts where he mentions these zodiac symbols, and for those who are not familiar, I certainly am not familiar, but I found them online and put it here so that you know exactly what we're talking about. The astrological signs are below here, but he says that a person in their lifetime is compared to the 12 mazalot. The mazalot are the zodiac signs. When a person is first born, the person is compared to a tele. A tele is a ram. It's sometimes referred to as like a little sheep. Umisgaber kishor kishagadal. And the person, as they grow up, they're like a bull, because a bull, an ox, is a strong animal. And then the person becomes like twins, which is the Gemini. Because on the one hand, the person has a yetzer tov, but on the other hand, a person has a yetzer hara. So this is how a person grows up. And at first, a person is chalash kisartan. A person is weak, like crab, like the sign of the zodiac sign of Cancer, which is weak. In other words, a person succumbs to their yetzer hara until they can overcome it, until they mature more. V'achar kach kishenisgadel nisgaber karyeh. As they grow and they become stronger, they're like a lion. V'imchote Nasa kibisula, and if they are sinners, then they're like Virgo or Virgo. Ve'im mosif avanos shoklimo sobamoznaim, and if they have more sins, then we weigh them on the scales, which is a sign of Libra. And if a person continues to do bad, then they go down, as the Midrash says, to Sheol and Gehenim ke'akrav, which is like Scorpio, which the scorpion is thrown to the ground and the scorpion wallows in the ground. And however, if a person does tshuva, then zorkanoso lechutz kimora hachetz bakeshes. And the person is shot out of that depth, so to speak, like Sagittarius, like the shooting of an arrow from an archer. Lekachra gilin lehazkir amesim b'shabes shelo yeshuvu l'gehenim. And so I don't know how one leads to the other, but this is what the Midrash says, that a person, that's why we have the practice to remember the deceased on Shabbos, so that they should not go back to Gehenim. We look at this idea as a merit of remembering them on Shabbos, as a merit for their souls. And then he quotes, or at least he mentions that based on the a pasuk in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, Shekein Isa B'toras Kohanim, Kaper le'amcha Yisrael elu achayim, asher padisa elu hamesim. You want to achieve atonement for your nation Israel. This refers to the people who are living. Asher padisa, that you've redeemed, elu hamesim, this refers to those who are deceased. Mikan she'achayim podina samesim. And so from here we learn that those who are living, they redeem the deceased. And this is the source that he says, L'kach anu noagin la'azkiras ha'meisim b'yom ha'kipurim v'lesok aleim tzedakah. The original concept of an appeal and in the merit or the idea of yizkor that we have, which we do on all of the Yom Tovim, this is the original source for it. That we do it on Yom Kippur, that it's applied, that it has been applied and taken to other Yom Tovs, is a sign of sociology more than halacha and custom and practice and minhag, but it originated on Yom Kippur, because on Yom Kippur that's when we're feeling most, you know, the idea of life and death before us, and so it's at that point that people would make their donations in Yizkar for the memory of the deceased. And he continues and using the other images of the zodiac to say that if a person does rise up, then the person rises again like the arrow of Sagittarius, and then the person is nase rach v'naki kigdi, then a person is considered innocent and clean like the Capricorn, like the goat, and the person achieves tahara, umazin alav mayim torah midli, and then we take Aquarius, and the water which is poured from the water bearer of Aquarius in a sense purifies, v'gadal barov hana'a kedag hanen ebemayim, and then the person is compared to the fish, Pisces, which is a symbol in a sense of purity, which comes from being in water. Now, this, you know, for the people who appreciate the zodiac signs, this may be meaningful, but the idea is that life has its different stages; it has its ups and downs. And what the Midrash is in a sense focusing on is the idea that on Shabbos we're trying to elevate the soul, because Shabbos is a day of the soul's elevation, but also that people make choices in their lives, and those who are gone, as we mentioned before, they don't have the opportunity anymore to do the mitzvos. So it's left to us to do mitzvos in their merit and on their behalf, and hopefully through proper dedication and proper devotion, we can indeed raise their souls on Shabbos and on their yard site, which is the day when their soul, according to our tradition, is being re-judged. Okay, so this leads us into our next yard site practice. Okay, and this one comes from the Gemara. So before the headline has it, but look at the Gemara, and it's the Gemara in Shabbos. So it's in the chart on the bottom. Excuse me, the Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Chaf Amud Aleph over here. Meisive, the Gemara asks the question: Eiza Yisra Ha'amur B'Torah. What is the prohibition which is mentioned in Torah? The Gemara is referring to if a person is making a vow. In what way is the vow binding? So the person is going to make a vow not to eat, and comparing it to specific days. Ha'omer, a person who says, Harei alai shelo ochal basar v'shelo ashta yayin. I'm taking a vow upon myself not to eat meat or drink wine. Kiyom shemeis bo aviv, as on the day that the person's father died. Kiyom shemeis bo ploni, on the day that any individual that they have such a practice for passed away. Kiyom sheneharag bo Gedalia ben Achikam, as on the day that Gedalia was killed, which is Tzom Gedalia. I'm making a vow to fast just as on Tzom Gedalia. Kiyom shera Yerushalayim b'chur bana, as on the day when Jerusalem was destroyed. What day is that, everybody? Tisha B'Av, okay. So the Gemara says, Asur, for that person, they're making a prohibition upon themselves to fast. So Shmuel says this applies if those days have been accepted by you, then the vow would parallel and it would work. But the first example that the Gemara has here is of a person who's saying, I'm not going to eat on such and such day, just as on the day that my father passed away. In other words, there is a custom to fast on the date of one's yahrzeit. So I remember when I was in camp many years ago. Yes? Okay, so yeah, I know those are specifics. Those are specific points, but we're going to look at all the other sources, and you'll see that it's about fasting. I know, because I know the end of the story. But anyway, So, but I'll tell you this. So I remember many years ago, when I was in camp, so one of the I asked one of the rabbeim a question. I said, you know, we have in the story of the Egel, the golden calf. So Rashi explains that the people were at the bottom of the mountain, and they looked up, and they saw, the image of Moshe dead on top of the mountain. She says, "How come? You know, for most people, when you see that the Rebbe, the teacher, whatever it is dead, what do? You mourn. Why did they start? Why are they starting to party?" So the Rebbe he answers the question. He says, "You know what? There's a story with fill in the blank. I don't remember who the Litvish rabbi was, but somebody came into his shul once, and he was a Hasidish type of individual, and he brings in his schnapps and his kichel and whatever it was, and the guy says, 'What are you doing?' He says, 'Oh, it's the Rebbe's yard.' Which Rebbe? I don't remember who. You know, it's the Rebbe's yard site. So on the yard site, we bring in the schnapps, the kichel, whatever it is. So the Litvisher rabbi said, 'On a yard site, you're supposed to fast. What are you doing?' So the guy says, 'Nah, you don't understand. The Rebbe, he was a Baal Moifis. He was a miracle worker. He did all kinds of things, and so we feel his loss, and that's why we're celebrating.'" And so the Litvisher rabbi's response was, "Ah, now I understand the question about Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, when Moshe is on the top of the mountain, how did the people know Moshe? He was a Baal Moifis. He was a miracle worker. People didn't know who was Moshe the man. He wasn't Moshe the teacher yet. He wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. He hadn't even received the Torah. So for them, when Moshe Rabbeinu really died, the Torah tells us that they cried for 30 days. But when Moshe is on top of the mountain, they think that he's dead. To them, he's only a Baal Moifis. He's only a miracle worker, and that's why they partied at the bottom of the mountain." But the idea, you know, at least from the joke, however you want to take it, is that a proper response to, on an individual basis, is to fast. I remember once actually being in a shul where an individual brought in food for everybody else to say, to say the brachos, the aliyas neshama, etc. And when somebody said, "No, Moshe, have a l'chaim with me," he says, no, "It's my father's yard site, I'm fasting today." So everybody else could drink and say the bracha, le'ilui nishmas, that's certainly proper. And I'm not saying this is a widespread custom, but certainly once upon a time, there were people who would fast on the yard site of their loved one. Okay, so let's take a look at the sources here. Right under the Gemara, Shemati Memoreno Rav Shabiyom Shemes Bo Aviv Shekarn Yard Site Misanin Bo Biyom Shemes. He's quoting his rabbi who said that on the date of the death of an individual's father, which is called the yard site, you fast on that day. Velo biyom makvura, and you don't do it on the day of burial. Assuming that they're not the same day. In Israel, they usually are the same day, but often outside of Israel, they're not the same day. V'chein li'inyan kaddish, and the same thing applies for the recitation of kaddish. V'od shemati mimenu she'ein v'sanin yard site, lo b'rosh chodesh v'lo b'yomim shebein yom ha'kipurim l'sukkos v'lo b'mei Nisan. So on Rosh Chodesh, in the days from Yom Kippur to Sukkot, and in the month of Nisan, which are days when Tachnun is not recited and it's considered a celebratory day, so if a person happens to be that the person's yard site is on that date, so that would not be a day for fasting. Does the person need to make up that date? So I think that the answer would be no, although there are certainly people who might say, you know what, my parent died during this such and such period, right? So I missed that fast day, but I want to do that fast day, so they could theoretically make it up at a different time. Okay, the next source.
Shabbos.
What?
The yard site's Shabbos.
So then that year, you either wouldn't fast, or you'd fast on Sunday. Yeah, meaning if one wants to make that tashlum. In other words, the question of tashlum and making up for a fast day is something which is addressed in some of these sources. But like the fast itself, which is voluntary, I would say that the tashlumin would also be voluntary. The book Sefer Chasidim, Hayaroi leben shiyisase biyom misas aviv, v'chein amar Iyov ki lo sagad al sebitni. He quotes the pasuk in Iyov, it's a day of sadness. And because he did not close the doors of my insides. V'lo amar beten imi shehakol keguf echad. Doesn't say the belly of my mother, but it's bitni. In other words, I emerged from my mother, but it's because parents are considered like one flesh. Uksiv v'yikalel es yomo, and he cursed his day. V'yirmiyahu kein asa she'la'olam l'shan haba b'yosa yom lo yasameach. So he quotes Yirmiyah, who would on that date would not only not rejoice, but it's a time of fasting. Okay, the Or Chos Chaim says has the same custom there. Take a look at Shari Tshuva on the bottom. V'lchein yesh lizayir k'sheyesh sudas mitzvah b'yom yartzeit v'rotzel lahachmir latzmo lisanos b'yartzeit zeh. So if for whatever reason there's a sudas mitzvah, a celebratory time. Maybe on a person's yard site, somebody is attending a wedding. Maybe there's a bris that day. Maybe there's a siyum. Maybe there's something going on that would cause a person to want to participate in the sudas mitzvah. He says that in that case, yomar she'osa kein b'li kabbalah b'neder, v'yaz v'pam acher yihye mutar b'lo atara. In other words, a person doesn't have to make it that I'm always fasting. Each year a person says, I'm fasting this year, or I'm going to assess what the date is, what's going on at that time, whether I'm going to fast. But the point simply is that the practice of viewing the yahrzeit as a day of sadness, and therefore perhaps as a day of fasting, is a significant, you know, way of viewing what the time of the yahrzeit is really supposed to be about. It is a day in which I experienced a tremendous loss. It's a day in which there is a void in my life which has never gone away, and which cannot be replaced. Yeah.
How does the Or Chos Chaim say mitzvah? What mitzvah is that?
So the fact that he uses the term mitzvah, you know, we could talk about that in general. You know, the word mitzvah is used a lot. I don't think it means it's one of the 613 mitzvahs. It doesn't mean that. It means it's a very good idea. All right, you know, we could nitpick. You know, open up a Shulchan Aruch, we'll nitpick everything. So we can do that. Okay. Oh, and the Pischei Tshuva on the side here, which is based, it's in the laws of Avelus. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeh, it talks about different practices related to how one relates to the death of one's parent. So in there, he talks about the concept of Tashlumin. Okay, and again, it's up for grabs if a person is going to make up, if for whatever reason the day is missed, if something else takes place, as I mentioned before, a sudas mitzvah, which would cause somebody perhaps to miss the opportunity to fast, but that is that each person will have their own way of going about choosing what they're actually going to do. Okay, if you'll turn over the page, we're going to go into a few other practices. It's important to note, you know, some of the people who are very careful about observing yahrzeit, they make a big deal about the recitation of Kaddish. It's a yahrzeit, you have to say Kaddish. The truth be told, if a person goes back to the sources, the recitation of Kaddish is something which, up until relatively recently, wasn't something which was done by everybody who needs to say Kaddish on that day. The recitation of Kaddish, there was this Kaddish, okay, Yankee, you do this Kaddish, or the next Kaddish, okay, you do this one. It was given to a specific individual based on, you know, whatever criteria there may have been, if a person had a yahrzeit, if a person was what we call a chiyuv, who's going to say this Kaddish, and what's going to, who's going to be the one who's designated for that. So, take a look, that's just the background. We're going to see a little bit more about that in a couple of minutes. When we look at the left column. But anyway, this Shelus Uchuvos, he says, Harei Al Kopanim, Shamar Ben Tafkido B'Yartzeit. What is the, this is a David Ben Baruch Klonimus Sperber of Romania, in his Shelus Uchuvos Farkasta Da'anya. So he says here that a child observes the practices which he has to do on a Yartzeit. What does he do? Lamad, he learned, Viz Palel, and he davened, V'yamar Kaddish, and he said Kaddish. V'nasan tzedakah, and he gave charity. He donated money to somebody who was more needy. Le'ilui nishmas aviv. And this is for the sake of the raising of the soul of his father. Sha'al yidei zeh, vada yesh his kashrus avos lebanim. This is the eternal connection between father and son. V'isanami b'sefer kava yashar. You can skip to the end of the line. He quotes just a couple of other sources. Mikan nispashet ha-mineg yafesh b'Yisrael. Sha'olchim al kivrei avos lispalel b'yom shemesbo aviv o'imo. Is accustomed to go to the grave of the deceased on the day of their yahrzeit. Some people even travel. I was just speaking to my mother yesterday. As I mentioned, her mother's yahrzeit is next week. So my parents happen to be in Israel this coming weekend for a wedding. So they're going to be there for my sister's yahrzeit. So they're planning to go. To go to her grave at that time. I think they're going to miss my grandmother's yard site. But my grandfather, they're going to be back there for his yard site, which is the following month later. So they're going to go at that time as well. It's a minhag. Is it something that a person needs to do? Do you need to make that trip special? If the person whose yard site you're observing is very far away, I don't think a person needs to make that trip. We live in a mobile world. But they were probably referring to a time and place when people lived in the general vicinity. I don't think a person needs to go to that expense or that extreme in order to do that. And it's a custom, however you want to view it. But there was such a practice to go visit the grave of one's parents on the yard site. A few more practices. We're going to follow along. We're going to go around before we look at the last two, which are the Shelos Uchuvos of the Chelkos Yaakov and the Mishpatei Uziel. So starting on the top line there, leading davening when fasting. So this Mishnah Berurah is on Tav Kuf Pei Aleph. So it's the laws of Rosh Hashanah, where the Ramah says there are some places where the practices. To that the person who is leading the slichos leads the davening the entire day, and it's referring to in the pre-Rosh Hashanah period when we're saying slichos, or during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. So he says to daven kol hayom, and the Mishnah Berurah says shachris umincha, right? To that person who leads the slichos should also daven, should also lead the davening for shachris and mincha. And the Magen Avraham says the mitam zeu kodem la'avel v'lamoel ul'yartzeit. The tefila talia baratzon hakahal, that whoever leads the slichos comes before a regular mourner and a mohel and a person who is observing the yard side who might otherwise lead the davening. V'ha'eliyo rabba mepakpek v'zeh, but the Eliyo rabba disagrees and says v'dato the yard side yeshlo lehispalel imhu misane, that if the person observing the yard side is fasting, that makes him an extra special representative of the tzibur at this time when we're saying slichos. So he's following the custom of fasting on the yard site, and that also trumps the person who led the slichos. In other words, the yard site in that type of circumstance, who's fulfilling the yard site observance in the best possible way by fasting, that individual can lead the davening, even though a regular yard site observer who isn't fasting would not trump the one saying slichos. It just goes to show how far a person can go in terms of that observance. And in a halachic question of who gets to lead the davening, a person might say, oh, I have a yahrzeit. Well, no, the person leading the slichos leads the davening today. But I have a yahrzeit. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm fasting. Oh, you're fasting? Okay. Then you're observing in that way. You have a more special merit for as a representative of the tzibur on this day. So that person would lead the davening on that particular day. But of course, the indicator is that, in general, a person who has a yard site would lead the davening, except that there are mitigating circumstances at this time, which would perhaps prevent a regular yard site, but not a yard site individual who is fasting as well. Skip to the part that says getting an aliyah. We'll look at that one, and then we'll go back to the middle one. The Pisrei Tshuva. This is the Pisrei Tshuva here is also in the laws of Avelus, and the Shulchan Aruch tells a story that Rabbeinu Tam, every time Rabbeinu Tam was in shul, he would get shlishi. It's an interesting practice. That would mean that nobody else is getting an aliyah during the week. But anyway, so when he was in Avelus, they didn't call him. And he went up anyway. He went up anyway. Why? Because, it was on Shabbos that he would always get Shlishi. And the reason why he went up anyway to get Shlishi, as he does on every Shabbos, is because he explained that if a person would see that he wasn't going up, they would say he wasn't going up because of the Avelus. And we know that the rule of Avelus is that we don't have public mourning on Shabbos. And if the practice in that shul was that Rabbeinu Tam always got Shlishi on Shabbos, and he wasn't going, then it would show, hey, look, this is public mourning on Shabbos, and you can't allow that. And it goes on to say, and if the Kohen is an Avel as well, and there's no other Kohen in the shul, that he should be called. But he's not given any other specific honor. In other words, if there's only one Kohen in shul, and he's an Avel, and he's not supposed to get the Aliyah because of his Avelus, well, we don't say, Ein Kan Kohen, we don't skip the Kohen from getting his Aliyah, because that would be a public sign of mourning. If there's another Kohen, then it's fine, because you can call the other Kohen. But if he's the only Kohen, then he should get the Aliyah. So in that context, but he doesn't get any other honors, the Kohen. So the Pesachei Shuvah says, V'kasav, di'im ira la'avel b'shabbat, shetoch zayin, hu chiyuv la'alos l'torah, kigon im yishto yoledes, o shu yartzayit, mutar la'alos l'torah. So in other words, if a person is in the middle of Shiva, and it's the Shabbos in the middle of their Shiva, and there's another reason why they should get an Aliyah. For example, right? I've seen it happen where in the same week that that a person is now sitting Shiva, the person's wife gives birth. It happens, you know, often enough that type of circumstance could happen. So it's his wife just gave birth. He merits an Aliyah. So even though he's in the middle of Shiva, he can still get the Aliyah. Or if he has a yahrzeit. He's in the middle of Shiva, but he has the yahrzeit. He's supposed to get an aliyah because of the yahrzeit. Mutar la'alos the Torah. Tim eino ole, yeah, avelus b'farhesia. He's supposed to get it because of the other circumstance. So the fact that he's in Shiva, we're preventing him when he should be getting it because his wife gave birth or because of the yahrzeit. So the answer is that's public mourning. We don't do public mourning on Shabbos. For him not to get an aliyah, most people in shul don't get an aliyah on Shabbos under normal circumstances. But if he's supposed to be getting it otherwise, then he should get it. And of course, this is an indication that the yahrzeit does get precedence in terms of getting an aliyah. And the next thought, the Mishnah Brura on Siman Kuf Mem Zayin. So the Mishnah Brura there, these are the laws of Kriyas Torah. And the Shulchan Aruch says, who gets Glila? And he actually says that the concept of Glila is, although the Mishnah Brura explains that Galila refers to Hagba, but nonetheless, he says Galila, that Galila is actually a very special honor. Uregilim leknoso bedamim yikarim lechaveva mitzvah, and people would purchase it in places where they would auction these things off for a lot of money. The honor of rolling up the Torah. So who gets to roll it? So he says, the Mishnah Brura says, im yesh shnei yartzai biyom echad v'echad ala l'torah, Yesh l'chabed ha'sheni behagba. That if two people have a yahrzeit and one of them got an aliyah, the other one should be honored with hagba. That's proper practice. I was in a shul recently where there are, I think, four or five kohanim, and they threw them all out so that they can give two people with yahrzeits an aliyah. And I was told afterwards that one of the people didn't even want the aliyah. So that's not a proper practice. We give honor to the Kohen, and we give honor to the lady, and then the other person gets the Aliyah. And if there is two yahrzeits, then the other person, then the second yahrzeit, the one who doesn't get the Aliyah, is supposed to get Hagba. In other words, there are ways to honor people who are observing a yahrzeit, unrelated to giving a specific Aliyah. Okay, so these are some of the things which are done in shul. We're going to get to Kaddish in a moment, but let's take a look at the one on the top. Do the candles have sanctity? So this is an interesting question. You know, nowadays this is much less of an issue because, as we all are appreciating now, we live in the era of electrical lighting. But once upon a time, shuls and base medrashes, they were lit with candles. And of course, those candles. Now, electricity also costs money, but we don't feel it in the same immediacy. You feel it when the bill comes. The president feels it when the bill comes. But the idea of lighting the room, whether it was a shul or a base medrash, depended on if they had candles. The more candles, the more light. And how do you get the candles? Well, people need to buy the candles. And if there are candles, we have light. If there were no candles, then we don't have light. So there were those who, as part of their Yahrzeit observance, they would specifically sponsor the candles for the day. And look at what the Shari Tshuva says. This is in the laws of Beis HaKnesses. So the Shulchan Aruch there says that we don't light any, you don't take the light from the candle. You know, it's similar to the laws of Hanukkah candles. You know how when we light Hanukkah candles, you're not supposed to use, the only candle that you can light from for any other purpose is the Shamash, right? But the other candles you're not allowed to use for any purpose because Haneros Halalu Kodesh Heim Ve'ein Lanu Rishus L'Hishtamesh Behem. The Hanukkah candles are considered holy when you have no right to use the light, to use the fire from those candles, even the light from those candles we're not supposed to use. But certainly the fire, we don't light from those. So he says, Nira Pashud La'asor La'hadlik Miner Shal Beis HaKnesses Miner Shal Beis HaKnesses Ha'paipa. Okay. So I know I was reading the Shulchan Aruch, but anyway, I'm sorry. The Shulchan Aruch just talks about the idea of lighting anything from the candles when they're lit. So it's on that notion that the Shari Tshuva says that a person in a shul may not light one's pipe. This is predates our fire's safety standards and just in general. Knows what? What? A pipe. Yeah, you cannot light your pipe from the candles of the shul. Why? Machmas kedushas beis haknesses. Because the lights which are given to the shul and are used to light the shul are considered holy. They're considered to be used for holy purpose. Shezeh havei kamo achila ushasiya. This is like eating and drinking, in the sense that it's for life. So you also can't use the light of a yahrzeit candle to light a pipe. Because the yahrzeit candle is also utilized for the honor of the shul. And because the shul is a place in which holy activities are taking place, so the lights which are utilized and designated for that space are considered to have an element of Kedusha, similar to the kind that we give to the Hanukkah candles, that we're not supposed to use the fire, the flame, to light something else. Yes?
Now on Easter, it's a custom to light candles at home. Is the custom, accepted custom, that we light per, let's say you lost your mother and your father, you light one candle, or is it per person?
So I don't know for sure. I would imagine that the practice is per person. That both practices are available out there. So it becomes a question of how many yard sites are you observing? So I remember my for Yisker. I would imagine it can go both ways. What I would say, though, is that what we're mostly talking about as far as yahrzeit goes is vis-a-vis, for parent. So since, thank God, most people have two parents, so to do two, I don't see any harm in it. It can go either way. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, that's certainly an interesting practice. That's like, look, I have a friend who's very into segulas. Okay, he's very into segulas. You know, the red bentel and all that stuff. I'm not into segulas at all personally. Although if they don't harm anybody else, I guess what's the harm? So I was kibitzing him about there are some people after they have dala, so they take the candle and they put it out into the thing and they're lining this. So I'm like, how often do you go to the dry cleaner with your suit when you do that? And he says, what are you talking about? Parnassa, Parnassa. I said, okay, if you want to drink from the yard site your tea, I hope all the wax is gone, But I'm not, I, you're talking to the wrong guy. You know, but enjoy, I guess. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You get up in the middle of the night and you want to read, you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. Are you permitted to go over to where the Yahrzeit candle is burning and utilize that light to read?
So I think the answer is absolutely. It's not the Kedusha that we're talking about is Kedusha that you can't take the flame. And we may only be referring to, by the way, in a shul specifically, the idea that you can't, meaning that concept of Kedusha. But the idea of not using the light, that's unique to Hanukkah candles. Okay, ein lanu rishus lishtamesh b'hem is Hanukkah candles. But for anything else, in a shul, the whole purpose of the candles was to utilize the light. You're lighting up the room as best as possible. So I don't think there's any problem whatsoever in doing that. The question is, this is an interesting question. But I don't think it would be a problem specifically because of what it's used for. The question would be, when we have a two-day yantiv, so we light a yahrzeit candle so that we have a flame lit so that for the second day of yantiv we can light candles. We can light the yantiv candles. So we were talking about not using it to light a pipe. That's not a davar shebikdusha, but to light Shabbos candles, yantiv candles from a yahrzeit candle, I can't imagine that would be a problem. Yes? What bracha would you recommend? No, but that's because it's a minhag. It's not a mitzvah. All the other times when we light candles and we say brachas, there's a mitzvah associated with it. This idea, like the first source that we saw today, was that it stems from a limud from lahalos ner tamid regarding Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not a mitzvah, so there's no bracha to be recited. I mean, safek brachos lahakel. We're not gonna make up a bracha and apply it to this lighting. The lighting has different significance than the light of a mitzvah. And in the shul specifically, it may have a concept of kedusha, which therefore shouldn't be used for lighting a pipe or lighting a cigarette or whatever it may be. But that doesn't translate to a need for making a bracha. The idea of saying brachos for the aliyah of a neshama, we generally associate with with food, brachos, which we can legitimately add and understand and justify. But a bracha for lighting a candle, which is not associated with a mitzvah, because it's not for everybody. Right? It's not something which everybody's doing, and for any individual, it's on a different day. It's not like, Shabbos, which is the same for everybody, Yom Tov is the same for everybody, Hanukkah is the same for everybody. Yeah.
I don't see the thing of lighting. I saw it.
Right, okay, then that's certainly proper.
Then,
yes.
No, then I speak about it.
Okay, right. So these are proper things to do. Right, absolutely. So to mention in whose merit or commemorating whose neshama we're doing this is certainly appropriate. Okay, I just want to look at quickly as we can, the next few sources, and then if people have a few more items of feedback, we have a few more minutes. So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Siman, Shin, Ayin, Vav. Si'if Dalet. Okay, so these laws are also in Hilchos Avelus. So this is the Rama. He says, "V'nimtza b'midrashos lomar kaddish al av." I apologize. I realize that we didn't finish the Shaarei Tshuva. The Shaarei Tshuva. Just to go back to that for a moment, he talks about using the candle which is in the shul, but the candle which is in a base medrash, where chachamim v'talmidim kivuim. Where people are there all day to learn Torah and to teach Torah, and sometimes he says, just to show you how dated this is, sometimes they need to smoke li'ishun ha-tabak, they need to smoke some tobacco, He says, then it's okay to do it there because it's for a holy purpose, right? It helps their learning. So it just goes to show, you know, how things have changed. Certainly in some circles, there are places where they still allow smoking in the Beis Medrash, but it's interesting that the difference between what takes place in a shul, which is, you know, more strict as far as what's considered holy activity, this is davening, we're connecting to God, whereas learning, while it's certainly a holy activity, but it's something which people are involved in, if this could enhance it, can theoretically enhance their learning, then it's okay. Whereas smoking a pipe is not considered to be enhancing one's davening. When you're focused on the davening, then there's that special connection which is important. Whereas for learning, I guess once upon a time they felt that that was something which was appropriate. Okay, moving back to the Shulchan Aruch Yerodei Simin Shin Ayin Vav. V'nimtza b'midrashos lomar kaddish al av. So there is in the midrash it talks about saying kaddish for one's father. You know, of course, for a parent. Skip to the end of the fourth line, because we'll skip the parenthesis. Al kain nagu lomar al av ve'em. No, as I mentioned before, even though it mentions father, it includes mother as well. One can say for one's father, one's mother, kaddish basra yudbeis chodesh. Kaddish after the 12 months. V'chein nagu lahaftir benavi, and they would also give the person the haftorah, ulhispalel arvis b'motzai shabbosos, and the person who's observing the yard site would also daven for the amud, admarivan at the end of Shabbos. Shehu azman shechozrin haneshamos legehenim, because after Shabbos is considered a time when the souls that are going to Gehenim return there. Uchishahaben mispalel mekadesh berabim pode aviv imo min hagehenim. And when the son davens and says kiddush or kaddish in public, then he is elevating his father or his mother if their soul is, for whatever reason, in Gehenim. V'nagu lomar kaddish al ha'em afal pi sha'av chayadayin. And the custom is also to say kaddish for the mother if the father happens to still be alive. Eino biyado limchos livno shelo yomar kaddish al imo. The father cannot have the attitude that says, I'm alive. How could you be saying kaddish if a person, if his wife predeceased him? Of course, the child could say kaddish for his mother. I don't think that we have anybody who would ever call that into question nowadays. There are certain elements of, meaning, this is understood, of course. When a person loses a parent, no matter who comes first, you say kaddish. And I don't think that the living parent would ever object to saying kaddish for the one that died first. And then he concludes, mitzvah li'is'anos b'yom shemes av o'em, and he quotes the Rivash, v'holchem b'kol zachar minag, v'lvad shi'yehei minag kavua ba'ir. He calls it a mitzvah. I know it's not a mitzvah of the 613, but it's a mitzvah to fast on the day that the father or the mother died, but it's a minhag, and as long as the minhag is established. We continue, the bir halacha. This bir halacha in Siman Kuf Lamed Beis, it's a very lengthy explaining of the practice of saying Kaddish. Kuntris Mamar Kaddishin, Bo Yivuar Dine Kaddish, in which he explains the laws of saying Kaddish. Bikitzur, Mulukat Milavush, Magen Avram, Ukneses Yisrael, Ukneses Yecheskel, etc. So he quotes a bunch of people. Skip to after the three dots. V'yaretzait humishnei tamim. There are two reasons, perhaps, for saying Kaddish on the day of the yaretzait. O deba osa yom isra mazalo shel avel. Either because on that day a person just had bad mazel. If this is the date in which the parent died, this is a bad luck day for you. Kamosha kasev alavush biyardeas. He quotes a source which we saw earlier. O kedei sheyeh nachas ruach le'aviv l'imo l'hagin aleihem l'chaper nafsham. So the two reasons for saying Kaddish, one is because it's a bad luck day for you, and you need to kind of elevate the day for yourself, or so that it becomes a source of nachas ruach, everlasting comfort for the soul of the deceased. Yaret Saidocha la'avel yubeis chodesh, a person who's saying Kaddish pushes aside one who is in the 12 months of mourning, mikol atfilos v'akadishim shalchiyuv miyomzeh, from all the leading of the davening and all the Kaddishes. Of course, nowadays the practice is for everybody to say Kaddish together, so that one has kind of fallen by the wayside, but he gives examples. V'hakadishim, what are the kaddishes which we could be assigning, as I mentioned at the outset? Kaddish of Tehillim, and the kaddish of Shir Shal Yom, and the kaddish of Mizmor Shir Chanukas. Ein yachol lidchos la'avelim. So there is that discussion as to who gets assigned these kaddishes at this particular time. Okay, in the interest of time, I want to we won't look at the last one. I do want to look at the okay. Let's look at the source in the middle. The Shelos Uchuvos Mishpatei Uziel. Yes. Mm-hmm. The person saying the Kaddish, you mean?
You said the person saying
Kaddish raises the level of the soul saying Kaddish. Let's say this guy is really a good guy. The person saying the
Kaddish
or the
deceased?
Right. Okay, so my first answer to questions of this kind is, I don't know. Now, having said that, we have a tradition of some kind that the longest that a deceased could spend in whatever purgatory we've assigned to it is 12 months. Okay? In other words, whatever the soul needs to go through, so to speak, is a 12-month period, and after that, the soul is okay. Let the body, you know, let the body rot and whatever. But the soul is a soul. The soul is a spiritual essence. And this is the reason why we say Kaddish for only 11 months. Because we like to assume that nobody needs it for 12 months. Because they can't. Nobody's that bad. Now, having said that, if a person's a murderer or whatever it is, and it's known and it's not a secret and it's real, yeah, agreed. It's very difficult. But having said that, the bottom line is, it's the soul that we're talking about. And as much as we could do for a soul, I think is beneficial to the soul. And to think that, yeah, in the person's lifetime, the person was rotten to the core, fine. But now the person's dead, the person doesn't do any harm anymore. And so, as I also mentioned a couple of times, so we like to think that those who are left behind can bring merits to that soul. I mean, you know, there are people who we know about who are flawed and have made mistakes in their lifetimes, etc. And they have children who are, you know, good children, and who, as you know, when they grow up and they're as adults, they're fine people, and they don't follow in the parents' ways. But that's exactly the point. The point is, yes, the parent may have been bad, and when the parent goes, if the person is still alive, when the parent is gone, and the children are left behind, it's the children who are able through their own deeds and through their own choices to correct the misdeeds. And you can't bring back anybody who they've killed, obviously, but to stand as a merit for this person who was rotten. You know, we want to give them the credit, because we don't want to say, oh, your father, your mother was rotten, so therefore you are. No, that's not fair, because that's certainly not necessarily true. Yes?
Could you comment on the use of an electric flickering light instead of the old lights?
So the only comment that I'll make is that I mentioned at the outset from the book Matamim that Sha'va is from the similar word which relates to prayer. So there's that added, you know, significance, if you will. It's the same letters with just one flip around. Lighting an electric candle. This is a custom. It's not a mitzvah. So it's not like Hanukkah candles. If you light Hanukkah candles with an electric candle, I don't think that you're properly fulfilling the mitzvah, if at all. But for this, I'm saying. But for yard, I know I brought that as an example for the other side. Whereas for a yard side candle, does it matter? I mean, the point is that you're bringing light. So once upon a time it was candles. Nowadays, if a person wants to use electric, is it the worst thing? I don't think it really matters, because again, this is a minug, and the idea is this light is designated to bring light, you know, to the soul. So does it have to be a flame? I don't know that it really matters. Is it better to use a flame? Sure, it's better to use a flame because there's other things which are brought into the equation. But does it really matter? I mean, does any of this stuff matter? It matters to us. It matters to those who are observing the Eretzite because it helps us and it's meaningful to us. But in the scheme of, you know, halachic observance versus non-halachic observance, so these are minhagim, they're customs. I haven't mentioned any halacha here beyond the halacha of reciting Kaddish. But then who says it and whatnot? I mean, you know, these are minhagim. So, I mean, I guess maybe the order of hierarchy in terms of who gets an aliyah, that's a halachic question in the Yartzeit. Okay, let's take a look. Just that we'll do a little bit of the Mishpatei Uziel, and then we'll call this a day. Okay. Skip to the part which is in. This is the middle one, Mishpatei Uziel over here. Okay. Neros Shemadlikin. I'm in the bold. Neros Shemadlikin Biyom Yartzeit Hu Leilui Nishama V'Samchu Akra Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The candles which are lit on the day of the Yartzeit, they elevate the soul, and it's based on the pasuk of Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that the candle of God is the soul of a human being. V'hu b'chlal bara mizaka abba, and this follows along the line of thought that the son stands as a merit for the father. V'pulas mitzvah shel ha'aras beis hakneses, shehu l'chvod beis hakneses, in doing an act which lights up the synagogue, which is for the honor of the synagogue. And he quotes another pasuk from Yeshayahu, Be'urim kavdu Hashem, that with candles or with light, we honor God. Ve'im amnam amru ba'alei ha-kabbalah. The ba'alei ha-kabbalah, the Kabbalists said, Umare derazin, shaneros shemadlikim reis haknesses, mosifim ha'ara b'neros shamala. He says that the light of the sparks of the candles, which they light in the shul, they add to the light of the candles of above. Ein zos ela kechol ma'aseh ha-mitzvot sha'adam oseh usam be'ahava. I think this is a very important point, and this answers your question, Dr. Goldman, that this is like any other deed or mitzvah that a person is going to do with love and with a special emotional feeling of Kedusha. That essentially what a person is doing through lighting these candles and through bringing light into the world or into the shul or whatever it is, that's a person bringing light to the soul and bringing an element of illumination, if you will, to other people. And it's something which we have to understand not on a simple level, on a much deeper level. And that's the point behind the lighting of the candle. V'hanadava l'hadlaka zohi mitzvasa. And it's the donation for the lighting, or the donation of the lighting, or of the candles, that is the mitzvah. Mitzvah used not in the literal sense. And don't think that the mitzvah is only if you do it with oil or with wax or with some other material or electricity. Adarabba. Kol ma she'anu magdilim ha'ora adif tfei l'chvod beis hakneses v'ha'ara l'lomdim bo. Anything that we can do to bring about light in the shul or to honor the shul and to those who learn there, that is a good thing. And it's anything that we do to bring extra light, so to speak, that is what we're meant to be doing. And I think that's a good point to conclude with on today, that as much as we think about the technical thing, okay, you know, who's lighting the candle, what's it made of, are you using the cup, are you saying the Kaddish, whatever, what we're meant to do on a day of a Yartzeit is to do whatever we can to bring light into the world. So if it's about the saying of the brachos, beautiful. If it's about saying the kaddish, beautiful. If it's about learning on that day, beautiful. If it's about being mizakeh asarabim, in other words, to give others the opportunity to do something more. So bringing food is easy. Everybody wants a schnapps, everybody wants a piece of cake, a donut, whatever it may be. It's an easy way to get mitzvos done on behalf of the neshama. But the question is, what is the most... The biggest way, or the most global way, that a person can do that. So some people, they sponsor a shir. Some people, they invite people to learn together. You could think for yourself, what's the best way for you to do it? But the point is to do something above and beyond just the base and just the simple in order to raise the soul of the deceased, do mitzvos on their behalf. So the simple ones are the ones which we're all familiar with. But a person can do a little soul searching, so to I mean, no pun intended, soul searching to say, what can I do that will be the biggest merit possible in terms of harbatzas Torah, right? Torah learning, mitzvos that others can do, doing it on behalf of the soul of the deceased whose yard site we're commemorating at this particular time. I think that that really is the best way to commemorate a yard site. Okay, thank you very much.
I want to thank